Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
You're listening to Fox News Radio. I'm Ben Domenech. This has been a very interesting week in terms of the developments in Washington, where Speaker Mike Johnson has been facing enormous challenges, an inability to navigate based on his very slim majority in the House, the fact that he is already facing a motion to vacate from Marjorie Taylor Greene, and his own belief in the importance of delivering foreign aid, especially to Israel, at this time, have all put the Speaker in a very difficult position.
My philosophy is you do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may. If I operated out of fear over a motion to vacate, I would never be able to do my job. Look, history judges us for what we do. This is a critical time right now, a critical time on the world stage. I could make a selfish decision and do something that that's different. But I'm doing here what I believe to be the right thing. I think providing lethal aid to Ukraine right now is critically important. I really do. I really do believe the intel and the briefings that we've gotten that I believe Xi and Vladimir Putin and Iran really are an axis of evil. I think they're in coordination on this. I think that Vladimir Putin would continue to march through Europe if he were allowed. I think he might go to the Balkans next. I think he might have a showdown with Poland or one of our NATO allies. To put it bluntly, I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys. My son is going to begin in the Naval Academy this fall. This is a live fire exercise for me, as it is so many American families. This is not a game. It's not a joke. We can't play politics with this. We have to do the right thing. And I'm going to allow an opportunity for every single member of the House to vote their conscience and their will on this. And I think that's the way this institution is supposed to work. And I'm willing to take personal risk for that, because we have to do the right thing, and history will judge us.
This was the week where everything really broke open. In order to push forward on a bunch of different foreign aid packages, he had to essentially sacrifice the possibility of any kind of achievement on border security that would take Republicans with some momentum into the coming election. But it's really an open question of if that was even a possibility. It's something that, frankly, I think was always going to be pretty dubious, given the slim margin that he had to work with on the House side and all of the opposition from Democrats on the Senate side. So what lessons are we to take from this experience? What can we learn from what happened with these foreign aid votes? And what do we know now about the GOP as a party that is willing to spend significantly on the military, apparently, when they believe it's still important? Frankly, I think that this is a lesson in what matters and what doesn't, who matters and who doesn't, when it comes to finding a true forward-looking Trump-Reagan fusion on foreign policy. I wrote about this in the context of reviewing a new book by Matt Kranig and Dan Negria, who wrote a Ukraine-focused piece for Foreign Policy last week. It's worth your time. But that's just writing. It's not voting. And this week brought votes, and that includes more useful indicators of what's going on when it comes to the decision makers who actually can affect foreign policy in the country. First, I think one lesson has to be that the most populist fringe of MAGA lost repeated and significant tests within the House, in opposition to a speaker they chose to elevate over Kevin McCarthy, who maintained his support from Donald Trump throughout this whole process. Trump never lifted a finger of serious objection to any of these foreign aid bills, except to voice his repeated belief that Europe should pay more. They should, but many of them already are. I would just point out that 18 of the 31 NATO countries, might actually be 19 at this point, are beating that 2% level. In a future episode, I want to talk about how I think that 2% level is completely insufficient and actually needs to be doubled in order to have any kind of real meaningful delivery when it comes to defense policy. But that's for another day. There's some hand waving, of course, of disagreement on the TikTok forced divestment from Donald Trump. We've talked about that previously, about how he's being influenced by those who are around him. And everyone knows that's not driven by some deep ideological objection. It's just that there are a handful of donors and influencers around him who basically are making the argument that TikTok shouldn't be singled out. That's fine. But it's completely at odds with the priorities of the current Republican conference, and it's why they chose to ignore him in this instance. The popularity of all these positions can be disputed. When you look at different polls on the Ukraine issue, for instance, it's interesting to me that you see that there are pretty consistently polls showing that a majority of Republicans favor military aid to Ukraine, meaning bombs, things that go boom, things that kill Russians, etc., that they really, you know, have stuck to a majority position when it comes to that. But that when you expand it into the realm of foreign aid, humanitarian aid, etc., then all those numbers go down. Okay, well, one of the things that we've really seen happen in terms of the war effort is that Europe, because they don't have the kind of militaries, the kind of, you know, functional entities that they can flow money into easily, that will supply things that go boom to Ukraine, they've instead been taking more and more of the humanitarian side of the load for refugees, for paying for various things that are coming down the pike when it comes to Ukraine's government and the like. And that's just something that I think is natural to expect. And frankly, is a reason why we should leave that to Europe and then say, come to us when it comes time to, you know, pick your next weapon. We'll see how this is reacted to in terms of the populace. But frankly, from my perspective, I just don't think that there's a single person who's worried that they're going to suffer electorally for the votes that they took, whether on Ukraine, on Israel, on Taiwan, or on TikTok.
More of the Ben Domenech podcast right after this.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
So what's to be taken from a very loud faction on the right just losing outright, and the rest of the members of a very pro-Trump, pro-MAGA, you know, populist house feeling free to vote the way that they did? I think you can measure the real opposition on Ukraine not by the 112 Republican votes against aid, but actually as being around 55 members. That's the number of Republicans who voted against the rule to advance the complicated package that was placed before the House. Between the rules votes, Ukraine, TikTok, FISA, those are all areas where some of the populists might be taking positions that are less popular than they represent in their normal, the people versus the swamp framing. That's a framing that obviously works in a lot of different instances, and honestly is true in many different respects. But I don't think it was true here. In fact, I think one of the ways to look at this is just, this was a simple miscalculation on leverage and the way to use it within a political argument. With a border deal that was deemed impossible at this late stage of an election year, people who stuck to that line ended up being forced to in a position where the conference would have to fold one way or the other. There are developments that in Israel, Iran, China have reset the foreign policy discussion in the last couple of months. Those are drawing focus away from Ukraine, allowing Republicans to return to their traditional hawkish standard on a number of different things. Republicans are most comfortable when they're criticizing Democratic administrations from the right for being too weak. And in each area, this is what world events and the Biden administration has allowed them to do. Overall, The conclusion reached in Washington this weekend will be seized upon by many people who declare themselves to be the greatest advocates for Donald Trump, as indication that the Republican Party needs to be burned to the ground, or that Mike Johnson should be vacated, or that this is just the swamp reasserting itself, the military-industrial complex, the Uniparty, so on and so forth. But that's clearly not the case. Instead, it's a sign that the GOP, which is now the party of Donald Trump, remains the party willing to spend significantly on the military when they believe it's important, unwilling to show a weak hand in defense of Israel or in opposition to China. If Trump disagrees, he certainly never vocalized it in any way over the past couple of weeks. And there's a lesson in that, too. I'm Ben Domenech. You've been listening to Fox News Radio. We'll be back soon to dive back into the fray.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.